Welcome to the Sober Awakening Podcast, where we empower individuals to cultivate a sober mindset and deepen their intuitive connection to the divine spark within. I'm Tim Lyons, the president, CEO, and founder of Sober Awakening, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to providing inspiration, resources, and community support for sober-minded individuals seeking spiritual growth and purpose. Please note that Sober Awakening does not have a financial relationship with any businesses, products, or services mentioned in this podcast. Any mentions are shared solely because they align with our mission to support your journey towards sobriety, self-discovery, and spiritual fulfillment. Now let's dive in and journey toward a life of clarity, connection, and empowerment together.
Hey, what is going on, everybody? You are back on the Sober Awakening podcast. Thank you for coming back. This is our second episode. If you are coming back, if you're catching us new, we are so glad you are here with us. I am Tim Lyons. I am the president, CEO, and founder of Sober Awakening. And today we have a very special guest with us. My friend Zach Sanders is a spiritual coach and an expert in the science of yoga. His business, Conscious Warrior Training, is designed to help others discover the light of consciousness and balance their energies so they may find inner peace and healing. He received training from masters in the Himalayas and at the Harvard Divinity School, where he studied Buddhist meditation. I did not know that. He hopes to bring these ancient practices to the modern person so they come to self-realization and balance. Zach, my friend, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah,
thank you for having me.
Absolutely. For the sake of the viewers or listeners, I met Zach on TikTok, and I was scrolling through. I was, you know, doom scrolling as we do, and I come across this real cool, meditation advice that Zach had offered. And it was really good. And I thought, wow, this guy is awesome. I wonder if he has any addiction in his past. And lo and behold, you did. You must have looked at my stuff because you reached out to me to invite me to join the community. And I found out you had the addiction. And I thought, wow, how synchronistic.
Yeah, we were two peas in a pod.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's just jump right into it, Zach. You had, like I just said, you had experienced a history of addiction. When you were in your addiction, where were you at? For me, I got to a point where I was 24/7 drunk. I could not function without alcohol in my system. I got to a point where my bottom took me to the emergency room. I had to get medical intervention to come off the booze. And then that launched a dried out period, but then I started the whole spiritual seeking. So when you were in the height of your addiction, where were you? How did you get there? What is your origin story as far as being an addict?
Yeah. Whew. Where to begin? Well, in the full force of my addiction, I was drinking as in the morning, before noon. I was already having like beer with my coffee. And once noon passed, I started moving into like the harder liquor. And then by nighttime, I was very well drunk. And I was doing that every single day, especially about the time I left college. It became every single day I was getting drunk, and not for fun. It was simply just to run from my pain and suffering that I had experienced as a child. Without, you know, going too deep into it, just like parents do, mine split when I was very young, and didn't see, obviously, my dad around too much. And so I internalized that as a child of that, like, I was not worthy of love. Then my mother, just to try to keep everybody sane, would not acknowledge when we were in pain, really, and would just kind of sweep it under the rug. Oh, no, it's okay. Everything's fine. And, you know, my parents were just doing the best they could. But what this turned into of me not acknowledging my own emotion, and me not feeling worthy of people's love or my own love in general. And that just sent me into darkness. You know, a lot of things happened in that span, but I was using alcohol and other substances, just to not hate myself. I experienced so much hatred towards myself and just not accepting myself, and was totally, immersed in that feeling. And so the only way I could escape that was to get drunk. But that would just make it worse.
Yeah. So what was your drug of choice? Was it primarily alcohol or?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I would take anything at all. I kind of shied away from the stuff that was known to kill you. I did lose quite a bit of friends to things like heroin and prescription medication and stuff like that. So I always kind of was like, I don't necessarily want to die tonight, maybe tomorrow, but not today. And so my drug of choice was primarily alcohol, but if there was really anything in front of me, I was snorting it, smoking it, doing whatever I could. Yeah.
So you mentioned that when you were in the throes of your addiction, you would have beer with coffee and everything like that. What was the earliest you ever drank? In my case, it was 2-3 a.m. because I shut it off. I'd pass out on the couch, and then when that alcohol would leave my system, I'd wake up with crazy anxiety, uncontrollable anxiety. And the only thing I knew to do, even though I knew it was horrible and it was killing me, only thing I knew to do in that moment was have another drink just to try to get back to sleep.
Man, I was so poor at this time. I was in the music business and stuff like that, and that did not help my alcoholism at all, because when you're getting started off in music, half of your payment is a bar tab. So almost every day I was being paid with alcohol, so that wasn't helpful. But I was not making a lot of money. In the mornings like that, I'd wake up and immediately smoke cannabis. I could not be sober. And my wife now, at the time she was my girlfriend, and she was like, "How long has it been since you actually had like a sober moment?" And I couldn't think of it. I couldn't think of when was the last time I was just like not on something. But I just could not handle being in a sober state. I had to immediately smoke when I woke up. So the earliest I would ever drink, would be probably 30 minutes to an hour after I woke up, but I'd already gotten high for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's our behaviors when we're in addiction, it's all the same. We are using these substances to try to run from ourselves, to just give ourselves that little bit of temporary reprieve from the hell that we're living. You're a rock and roll guy. You're a music guy. You look like a rock and roll guy, actually.
Yep, covered in tattoos. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So what was it that brought you to your bottom in addiction? And when did you finally crash out? What brought you there, and what made you decide that it's time to get this in check?
Yeah, this is definitely a painful topic for me, but spent a lot of years dealing with this, so definitely can be open about it. So what initially started my tailspin, if you will, I had lost another friend to an overdose. A very close friend of mine went to high school with me, went to college with me, he ended up overdosing on heroin. And then 2 days later, my dad attempted suicide. He's also struggling with alcoholism and addicted to other drugs, and had just come to the to his rock bottom, essentially, and attempted suicide. And so this all happened in the span of like 2 days, 2 or 3 days. And at this time I hated my father so much, just from, the past. And like my sister called me and was like, "Hey, dad tried to kill himself. And, he's in the hospital on life support. You should probably come down here right now." And I go, No, I hope he does. I'm good. If he doesn't want to be here, I don't want him here. And what is he ever, you know, he's not really even a dad to me anyway. So be like nothing changed anyway. And luckily my wife was like, you will regret this for the rest of your life if you don't go down to the hospital. So I drive all the way down there. It's like 1 or 2 a.m. in the morning. I go in there and see, you know, breathing tubes, all like my dad's just on life support. And I remember my mom was like, hey, do you want to say something to him? And I'm like, I have no words for him. I don't care. That just shows you how hardened my heart had become and how much darkness I was in.
Yeah, because if you know you now, that surprises me to hear. I'm surprised hearing that, because yes. The Zach that I've gotten to know recently is not that way at all.
No, it just shows you how deep in darkness I was, because that is not at all. It's just, it blows me away that I'm even saying that. Anyway, he did not die. You know my dad. And that is a blessing in and of itself that he pulled out of that. And he went to rehab for the 15th, 20th time. He would always go to Europe when I was a kid, but that was rehab. And wow. We didn't know that. This time around in rehab, they took a different approach and said, we have to bring your family here to do healing. We have to heal your family or you're not going to heal. And so they brought us all out to Arizona to do this family therapy for a week with him. And then I started hearing his stories and what brought him to alcoholism, what brought him to drug addiction and all of his pain and suffering. And that really started to soften my heart and start to understand conditioning a little bit of like, whoa, okay, he didn't choose to really take this route. He was suffering and in so much darkness. This is what happened. And he wasn't really intending this. So that is kind of like what kind of started the what's going on here. Probably I still continued drinking and abusing drugs after that. But it got my wheels kind of turning. I started to soften my heart towards my father. And that started the process now looking back on it. About 6 months after that, I was still, you know, smoking a pack of cigarettes a day, smoking weed as soon as I woke up, doing as many drugs as I could, drinking every single day, getting blackout every day. And then it came to the point where my body had shut down. My lymphatic system became so swollen. All of my lymph nodes were like paintballs or like marbles. And my intestines started shutting down. I could feel my internal organs stopping. And it was extremely painful. And so I went to the hospital and they ran all these tests and nothing came back with an infection or anything. And so the doctor was like, you know, we've ruled everything out. So this is more than likely lymphoma. And so we're going to need you to come in here so we can take one of your lymph nodes out and do a biopsy on it. And then and we'll get you into chemo and everything. And this totally freaked me out. And I was like, so what if I don't do this? And he was like, well, you'll probably die this year. And that was my rock bottom of like, wow. So from there, I went home and told my wife and my family of everything. And of course, they're freaking out. And so I went and had some alone time by myself and kind of had a panic attack in my room. And this... what I like to say, it short-circuited my brain till I stopped thinking. And I was just in absolute fear. And that brought me to this silence. And in that silence, in that stillness, I had this knowing that I had brought myself there because I didn't love myself. And that if I just started to find some inner peace and started to love myself, that I would totally heal. And now I know that that's, you know, the voice of the divine or the voice of your intuition. But anyway, that was the first time I had heard that voice. And so the next day I canceled my biopsy. I told my family, I'm not going to go and do that. I'm going to start to find inner peace and start to love myself again. And I know that I'll heal. Of course, my mother was very, very upset with me. My wife almost left me. And everyone thought I was crazy.
Had you had any spiritual training to this point? Because it's not normal that somebody would just intuitively say, oh, wait, I'm just going to go a spiritual, holistic route, and I'm not going to go through the medical process. I can see it if people had been studying, you know, holistic methods of healing and spiritual philosophies for a while, but you had nothing to this point. You were just like, no, I'm not doing the medicine thing.
Nope. I had had some experience like with hearing about like the flower of life, kind of like energy and stuff, how everything's energy, but it had nothing really like clicked for me. Sure. I had no spiritual training whatsoever. I had never even meditated before. Nothing. Yeah.
So you had kind of that like white light moment of clarity.
Yes.
There that some people in addiction talk about. Others, it's a gradual process. You just kind of had it, boom, this is what I'm going to do. Yeah. And did you go, was that it then after that point for the drugs and alcohol?
Yeah. And so what I did was I was like, well, I don't know how to find inner peace. I don't know how to love myself.
Right.
But I was like, those Buddhist people seem pretty peaceful. And so I went and bought a book by the Dalai Lama. I was like, I don't know where to go, but I've heard of the Dalai Lama before. So I read a book called Becoming Enlightened. And that taught me about consciousness and how we're all conditioned from our past suffering, from the things that we've gone through, our traumas and the stories that we are told as children from our parents and culture and everything. And that conditions us to see the world in a certain way. And then we operate through that conditioning. And so through that, then I realized like, holy cow, I am simply conditioned by my past and I'm running from my pain and I'm not wanting to deal with it. That's why I'm turning to the substances. I actually am not addicted to it. I'm afraid of feeling my pain. I'm afraid of healing. And so once I started seeing that, then I started to forgive myself for all the things that I had done, as we do when we're drunk. That just added a mountain onto my self-loathing was all the stuff that I did when I was drunk, the shame and the guilt of all of that. And so that started to lift a little bit of weight off of me, realizing like, oh, whoa, I wasn't actually consciously doing this stuff. I am conditioned. And so that started to open my heart to forgiving myself. And then I could start to forgive my parents and a stepfather who did some pretty terrible things. And so I just realized everybody was conditioned. And so that sort of softened my heart. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? And by the way, I see Lord Siddhartha behind you there.
Yes.
Yes. The Buddha. For those who don't know, the Buddha's actual name was Siddhartha Gautama. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Gautama. Yeah.
Gautama. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. I was on the right. I was on the right
close,
path there. Very close. But it's kind of funny you mentioned that you realize that there was so much programming that was built up there. I am a big fan of a text called A Course in Miracles. And I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
I've heard of it. I've not gone through it.
It was a channeled work that came about, I believe, in the 1970s. And they don't claim there's an author, but most course students and the channel herself, I believe, say it is Jesus. And it's a very, very, it is like spiritual Shakespeare because it really gets kind of heavy, but it is really a text and a workbook that takes you through 365 days of meditation exercises, but it is all to undo the programming. And you realize that everything that we are in this quote unquote matrix is what it is to us, only based on the programming that we receive. And once we can start to cut through the programming, we see the divine essence behind the form that we assign meaning to. And then when we see that, we start to forgive the programming because the programming is all an quote unquote illusion. That is the illusion that we've created when it's really not what we make things out to be. And then forgiveness becomes easy. That leads to enlightenment and therefore spiritual ascension. But I digress a little bit there. It sounds like it sounds like you have experienced something similar on your path, on your early path.
Absolutely.
So you went and you found a book by the Dalai Lama, is what you said. And then I know you had said that you jumped down a bunch of spiritual rabbit holes. I think you've alluded to that on some of your lives on TikTok. I think that a lot of people, when they get sober, and this is where I want Sober Awakening to try to or to catch as many people as possible. I don't see Sober Awakening as necessarily for people who are needing to get off the street to go to rehab. Sober Awakening is for those people who are dried out. They are physically sober, but they're spiritually seeking. In my case, I went back to Catholic Church. I was looking for things. It just wasn't doing it for me. So I started doing all this. I was very, very interested in stories of near-death experiences. I drive around all day, every day for my job. So I was listening to a lot of audiobooks, everything from, different mainstream mediums to Dolores Cannon, anything I could get my hands on. So I was going down all these rabbit holes, and I still do to some extent, although I find that the further I go on the journey of consciousness, it all comes to one singular point that I am finding lately. But so where were you? Where did you jump into the whole spiritual mix?
After the book by the Dalai Lama, then I was like sold. I was like, oh, absolutely, I can recognize this consciousness in me and other beings. And this is all within that 1 week. And then within that week, so after I finished that book in just a couple of days, I just like inhaled it. I shaved my head. I stopped eating meat. I stopped drinking alcohol. And I stopped abusing drugs. That was in a week. Right. And like you were saying, it's just like, I just became aware of my programming. I became aware of my conditioning and why I was doing what I was doing. And through that awareness, I had forgiveness for myself and others. And then the programming just started to shift. And so I just started to sit with things. Not fully. I had to meet a guru a couple of years later to really get me to feel. So after that book, then I was like, I don't know where to go. So that's when I enrolled in the Harvard Divinity School to learn about Buddhist meditation. So that took me about 3 months to get through. And still then I was still like a baby on this path. And so I wasn't fully aware of what was going on. And so then my wife was like, well, since you're getting into meditation, why don't you get into yoga? And I'm like, stretching? Like, I don't want to stretch. And she's like, no, it's a whole science of like opening your energy and balancing your energy and self-realization and enlightenment. And I was like, wow, that's pretty amazing. So I got all these books on that and on consciousness and energy and just far out stuff that I really wasn't understanding. And went to my first ashram, which is like a yogi training facility, and trained with a yogi there in hatha yoga, and learned some gentle yoga, some breathing techniques, but didn't have like a full-blown like enlightenment experience. From there, I was just like kind of staying with the Indian, origin. I was like into Egyptian spirituality, Indian spirituality, Native American. I was just like kind of all things spirituality. I didn't really know what it meant, but I was like, there's this just awesome information out there and I'm just trying to absorb it all. But that was just too much information. I was kind of lost on like what to do and why. But I was aware of like that the mind was an issue. It was like programmed. That was pretty much as far as I'd gotten in my level of understanding at that point.
Mm-hmm. So at that point, you had been exploring all these different avenues. What finally got you to go decide you were going to go to the Himalayas and how did you meet your guru? How did that all come about? Because that's where I feel like with you, the rubber really hit the road.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And so after my first experience of that ashram, a little time after that, I was in meditation. And then all of a sudden, I started to realize like, oh, wow, the body is an object I'm observing. The mind is an object I'm observing. Wait, so who am I? And then I started to observe the observer. And this was kind of like, okay, wow, there's a whole nother level to me that I haven't been tapping into. And so, but I didn't fully understand what I was tapping into. So I was like, okay, I hear India is like this place to go. And so I did this research and found out like kind of where yoga comes from. And so it's in Rishikesh, India, in northern India in the Himalayas. And so I went there for yoga training. And I didn't really know what I was looking for. So when I was going there looking for full-blown enlightenment, I was like, I got to get enlightenment. And so I go there, do the training. I'm there for like a whole month and did not get enlightenment. And so all I did was get more books and more information that just filled my head and I got more confused. Mm. And so I came back home and kind of frustrated that I didn't get enlightenment. And so then just stayed in the yogic practice for about another year or two, intense. I was practicing probably, around 6 to 8 hours a day. I was in yoga practice and meditation, breathing techniques, reading, studying. But what happened was I did not have proper guidance. I got way too deep in all of these concepts, all of these practices and stuff. And so I ended up falling into what you could call spiritual psychosis.
Yep.
And to where I started using spirituality just like I was using alcohol. I was using spirituality to escape my body and my mind and to not deal with my suffering, to not deal with the programming. I was like, oh, well, the body and mind, that's just a vessel. I am the spirit. I am consciousness. So why even deal with that?
Yeah.
And that is not the right way to do it. And so, yeah.
Yeah, no, I was going to say it's for the people who are listening to this who are familiar with some spiritual practice and the chakras and things like that. Where do we all go first when we want to try to open up our chakras? We all go to the upper chakras because that sounds so cool, right? Yeah. We want to connect with the seventh chakra. We want to open up our third eye and be able to see and know things. Nobody wants to get bogged down in the lower chakras, but that's where it all starts. Yep. Everybody wants to skip ahead, but you can't really do that, can you?
Nope. You have to go through the traffic. What my guru says, there's no shortcuts on this journey. You have to sit in the traffic. You got to go through the traffic. And what he's meaning is you have to go through your lower three chakras, your body, your feelings, and your mind. You have to.
Go ahead.
So I had gotten stuck in my upper chakras. I was just all about the spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. I did not want to be in my body. Because of the pain and suffering. And so I got stuck in spiritual psychosis to where I had a problem with my body. I thought life was a prison, like a matrix that I had to escape. And then I was thinking that there was like good and evil entities that could potentially mess with you. I was meditating one evening and my energy was just all over the place and I was not at peace. And I was like, what is going on? I'm doing all of these practices. I'm reading all these books. I've been practicing for years and years and years. Why am I not at peace? And I mean, I was at a lot more peace than I was when I was an alcoholic. Spiritual psychosis is definitely better than alcoholism for sure. Yes. It's way healthier. However, I still had a big problem with being in this life. I had a big problem with being in this body. And so just my addiction shifted to spirituality, reading spiritual books, doing all this stuff to escape. And so again, that intuitive knowing came that was saying, you need to find a master. You have to find a master. Don't just go to a school and like learn yoga. Like go find an actual master. And so I was like, I don't know how to do that. So I just like kind of let my intuition guide me. So I was guided back to that same town that I went, but now this time I knew what to look for. I wasn't just looking for a random yoga school to train at. I was looking for a specific master who was a master of pranayama, which is the control of energy. And so I found this master in an ashram. If anybody's interested, his name is Yogi Sunil Sharma. in Rishikesh, India, at the Gita Ashram by Ram Jula. If anybody wants to look him up, highly recommend everyone go to him. He's amazing. But anyway, I find this guy, did not know he was my guru at the time. And about the day one or two, he was like, "You're in spiritual psychosis. You are not enlightened. You're not a sage." And at this time, I thought I was. I thought I was enlightened. I thought I was a sage. And this pissed me off. I was like, I flew all the way out here, spent all this time to get here, and this guy's telling me all this stuff. I was pissed. And I've come to find out that was my spiritual ego. And without telling him anything, this was probably day three or four, he says, "You're using spirituality like you were using your addictions. And you have a problem with your body and you're trying to escape." I did not tell him that I used to be an addict.
Mm-hmm.
And so he pointed that out to me, and then it started landing. Oh, wow. He's right. I am a mess still.
Yeah.
He's like, "You have not healed. You're literally just using, you just switched it from your addiction to spirituality. You have not done any healing." And that sent me on a trip, man. I was not happy. I was very upset. But he, out of his love and kindness and kind of like firm backhand, he shared with me this practice to help me come back into my body and to feel my body and to be here fully, in silence, to let the mind be calm, to be fully embodied in silence. And then I don't know if I've ever shared this story with you. The first time that he did that to me or had me do that, I literally had, my full body convulsion. Like I could not stop it. It was almost like an exorcism. My whole body was, shaking uncontrollably, tears coming down. And it was the most intense thing I've ever experienced in my life. I felt like I was on fire. My hands and feet were burning so much. I was like shaking them and like it hurt. Mm-hmm. And come to find out that was the trauma leaving my body.
Yes. So it sounds like, and I don't want to go too far, too deep here, because some people listening or viewing might not know all the terminology. But when we talk about energy, it sounds like, is that kind of like your Kundalini was awakening, or is that what was happening, or was it something else? And for those people who might not know, can you explain what the Kundalini is?
Yes.
And the basic energy in the body and things like that. We touched on chakras a little bit. Some people might not know even what a chakra is.
Yeah, totally. So we can bring this into direct experience for everybody. So everyone listening right now, see how you can tell where your hands are without looking at them. So how is that even possible? How can you know where your hands are without seeing them? It's because you feel them. And how do you feel them? It's because of the electricity moving in your nerves and cells. That's your energy, right? It's literally electricity. And that's what you're perceiving here in your fingers. And you can feel that. And now you can actually feel that all throughout your body. So that's your energy. And if you pay attention to your spine and feel the sensations in there, you'll start to notice these places that have a ton of energy. That's what we call chakras. And so, nothing in this science is made up. It's directly experienced. And so what Kundalini is when that energy gets blocked. Kundalini means coiled serpent, which just means like a serpent that's like ready to strike. It has all that potential energy ready to go, but it's not released. And so our energy gets blocked because of the way that we're living, the way that we think, the way we eat, the way we sit. Everything determines our energy. And so if we're not living correctly, if we're not eating correctly, thinking correctly, there's so much tension in your body, tons of tension. And so the energy just can't flow correctly. And so once you start eating correctly, you do these stretches, you start to breathe right, you heal your mind and your programming, then the tension leaves your body and then the energy can release. The snake can strike. So the energy releases. Yeah, that's Kundalini. Yeah.
Got it. So the Kundalini at a very basic 30,000 foot level is the energy that wants to flow up from your base out your upper crown chakra, out your head. And as that gets blocked via trauma or whatever, you're holding it in your body, your energies cannot flow. And when your energies can't flow, you're getting sick, you're anxious, you have dis-ease in the body. So
yogis say this is where all disease comes from, is your energy is disturbed and out of balance. There's a block somewhere in your energy, and then that is manifesting at the physical level in one of your organs. So say like there's like you suffer a lot with like your past, right? You're not letting yourself deal with your past. This is your past memories. And this creates tension in your stomach. And so a lot of people that have a hard time letting go of their past, they'll have a hard time with digestion and stuff like that. If you have a hard time forgiving, you feel that in your heart, you can have a heart problem.
So where did so when you discovered that you were in this spiritual psychosis, just backing up a little bit, how did you go about healing that? How did you kind of reset?
My guru was like, you're in full-blown spiritual psychosis and you need to come back into your body. And so he goes, stop reading. You've read all that you can. Put the books down. Do not read anything else. And that day I had walked into what's called the Yogshala. It's a yoga hall. And my guru's in there. And I'm like, hey, Guruji, look at all these books I got. And he goes, no, no, no. And he goes, I want you to go give all of those books away.
I'll tell you what, I feel like I know exactly what you're talking about, because like I said, I went down every rabbit hole there is, from Dolores Cannon to psychics and mediums to meditating to meet my spirit guides, which I've done successfully. But what it all comes down to after a while is it's all kind of saying the same thing, and you're just looking for something. It almost becomes a little bit of insanity, a little bit of spiritual psychosis. The definition they say of insanity is doing the same thing over and over, looking for a different result. I'm reading the same things said, very valid things, by different people over and over again. So your guru told you stop that. So when somebody's at that point, where did you go next?
And so he said stop that. And now your whole practice is just to be aware of your body and the feeling of your body. And I want you to do that from here on out. And so now I've done that for the last 3 years. And my whole life has totally changed. I feel, when I got back from the trip, my wife cried because of how different I was. And she was like, I need to send this guy flowers and a note. Said, thank you.
Isn't that amazing? I've since I've gotten to know you the last about 2 months or whatever it's been since we met on TikTok, I've been participating in the community with you. I have been employing a lot of the techniques that you have taught, first by just going into meditation and feeling you, not out of your body, you as separate from your body. And then noticing pain or pleasure in the body and just sitting with it and observing. And now I've got this thing moving up. I've got this thing where I start to notice my thoughts. I have a little thought box that I create. And as a thought comes in, I just throw it in the thought box, throw it in the thought box. That's what works for me. And I've gotten to a point where I have begun to get pretty dang still. And I find that all of the voices that I was tapping into, spirit guides and everything like that, it's all still there. And these are points of consciousness. They really are. But you more become one with them. There's a lot less contrast. And it's almost like you are walking. And when you can do that, and then you start to do it with your eyes open somewhat, and you're just walking with the divine all the time. And that's where you're at.
Yes, that's my guru's point. He goes, be here in your body, totally surrender, and just be here in life fully and walk with the divine.
Yeah. And where has your life gone from where you were now that you've done this and you walk this way, or you attempt to walk this way every day? I'm sure you still have times when you fall off the proverbial yogic wagon. where is your life gone from that point to now, outwardly? Like, what do you see manifest in your regular day-to-day life that is just so awesome?
Yeah, so before I met my guru and he taught me the way, everything was forced. So I was trying to I was teaching yoga because I was trained in yoga, but I was like forcing the teaching. I was forcing like, hey, wake up to this and do that, and I was giving people way too much. And that's what was happening in my life too, is just kind of forcing stuff. I was forcing the reading, I was forcing the breathing, I was forcing the postures. And then after I met my guru, now I'm just fully embodied. And now I, the people that I work with, I just, like you were saying, I bring them to their body and then have them just feel without reacting. And then everything happens naturally, right? Things just start to awaken and the divine takes over. So now I would say my life is night and day, when before it was me trying to control everything with my ego. And now it's me just surrendered to the inner silence of consciousness and letting that lead me. And so now I don't plan classes, I don't plan anything, and the divine has led me into starting these communities, to where now I'm teaching people what my guru taught me, right? I'm not
Yeah.
teaching anything of my own.
Right.
And now, I literally had someone call me today and say, I found you when I was at the darkest place of my life. And if I didn't find you, I would be dead right now. You saved my life. I just
Yeah.
received that a couple hours ago. And
Wow.
so that's and that so that's what's happened with my life. And of course,
Yeah.
I don't take credit for that.
Right.
But that is that's the power of this practice. And so now I'm being used as a vessel, as an instrument, and I never understood that. My guru says, if you empty out and you just be here in your body fully, and you will become an instrument, and the divine will play through you.
Yeah, you mentioned something real interesting. You were trying to force things,
Yeah.
and you're trying to force things emotionally or spiritually. But I find too, the more that I let go and just let the divine work through me, your outward material needs and your life, you have everything you desire and more in a lot of cases. Now, we all desire different things. But you get whatever you need and more. It's really amazing. I think for a lot of people who are in early recovery from addiction, they've still got they're dried out, they feel better, but now a couple months go by and they still got their bills, they still have their job, they still have their broken relationships, and they don't know what to do. They're going down all these spiritual rabbit holes trying to find the answer, but yet they're trying to escape at the same time. They want their spirit guides to come and tell them the winning lottery numbers. That's what a lot of us go to spirit for. We
Totally.
want, okay, yeah, that's I'm sober. I feel a lot better. Life is more manageable, but I still have my bills. And if I could just meet my spirit guide and my spirit guide could sit here and tell me what the winning lottery numbers are, then all my problems would be solved. And that's really not the way it works. They
No.
don't, the other points of consciousness that are out there and we can communicate with, call them spirit guides or angels or whoever you want to, whatever you want term you want to use, they're not going to give you the winning lottery numbers, but they are going to help you to relax and just allow everything.
Yes. Yeah.
You
Totally. Well
know?
said. Absolutely.
That is,
We still have the suffering of life. We still have the weight, the burden of like raising our children, going to the grocery store and figuring that out, paying our taxes and stuff. It's like that stuff doesn't go away. And so a lot of us, like on the spiritual path, I know I did for years, of any time like something was going on with my kid, I wouldn't go and deal with it. I was like, you're ruining my peace. I'm going to go and meditate.
Yeah.
My wife and my kid, they're always in this disturbed state and they're always messing with my peace. It's like, no, that's not what we're wanting to do. We're wanting to be fully involved in the struggle of life, but surrender to the inner silence of consciousness, to the divine. How can we be peace in the chaos? How can we bring light into the darkness? It's not about running from it. How can you pay your taxes and be at peace and
Yes.
surrender to the divine, knowing that everything is okay?
Yeah, and when you do that, the world just becomes a different place. All your needs are met. It is crazy. You're happy, the right people come to you, the right situations, you start to truly realize that no matter what, everything is happening for you and not to you. So anyway, what I want to kind of touch on with some of the time we have remaining is, you know, we get these people, like I said, they're physically sober, they're spiritually seeking. Right now, they're watching Zach on this, or listening to Zach on this channel. And they're like, this guy seems like he's really at peace. He's come through the addiction. He's got so many things going for him. They're looking at each other like, I want to have what he has. But I don't necessarily have the means right now to go to India and to study with a guru or anything like that. What are some practical places people could start? And one thing I did want to definitely ask you, I am asked by people all the time, because I say my biggest game changer was getting into meditation, however you start it. And people will say all the time, I can't shut my mind off. Yeah. For the beginner, I recommend meditation. I'm sure you get this question all the time. Where, how would you... tips, tricks, best practice to get somebody who cannot shut their mind off, wants to start meditating, how can they start?
Well, first things first, you do not battle the mind. That's the mind fighting the mind, and it just makes it worse. So you don't fight the mind at all. You let it do what it wants to do. And so you come to the breath first. Breath is absolutely key. If you think about when your mind is disturbed, your breath is disturbed. When your mind is at peace, your breath is at peace, right? Think of when you're like angry or frustrated, your breathing is heavy or choppy. When you're hanging out at the beach or just like watching a movie or something, your breath is very calm and slow. And so inversing that, if you start to slow your breath down, then it calms your mind and your nervous system down. And so an easy example is just to breathe in for 3 and breathe out for 6. You're just slowing the exhale down. What this will do is it'll bring you back to your body. The reason why we can't meditate is we're lost in our thoughts. And so first things first, come back to your body. Come back to your breathing. And then what we want to realize is that the mind, the thought, is an object, just like a sound is. Or just like any object is. That your thoughts are just like that. They're just objects. And so seeing it like that of like, oh, the mind is just an object, it helps to separate you from the mind. And then you can actually meditate. A lot of people try to meditate with their mind and they try to think their way through meditation. That's not meditation. That's called thinking.
Right.
Yeah. And so what meditation is to keep your attention in one place. And what that does is it helps you to realize you are not the thoughts, right? You're paying attention, say, to your breath. Breathing. Thought comes in. Thought passes. You're still here.
You're still on the breath.
Yeah, you're still on the breath, right?
You're still on the breath. You watch the thought come in, the thought leave, and you're still on the breath.
Yes, right. And so what this shows you, oh, I'm not that passing thought. The thought comes and it goes, right? And you'll get distracted a million times. The point is to keep bringing your attention back. That's working out your meditation muscle. A lot of people think, I can't meditate. My mind was so busy. Well, the fact that you noticed that your mind was busy means that you were meditating. Mm-hmm. There's not a wrong way to meditate. And so this, by keeping your attention, keeping coming back, that is strengthening the meditation muscle. But a lot of people just try to jump into meditation without first doing breathing.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I have a sister who the last 3 to 4 months or so has really begun walking a more spiritual path. She started by saying that I'm just having a hard time meditating. I can't shut my mind down. She went to somebody and mentioned that to him, and he's like, wait, 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 breath work first.
Yeah.
She went to a couple of his breath work classes, and that changed everything for her. Now she's not having trouble meditating at all. And I have also noticed, you were talking about that on one of our sessions, just, you know, if it's even too hard to count, just make sure the exhale is longer than the inhale. So the last couple of days, I've been really leading with that. And like we were talking about, I'm right there on the breath. The thoughts come and go. after about 10 minutes, I'm like, okay, I'm still on the breath. Now I'm going to stop even trying to regulate my breath. I'll stop that. And the mind is pretty blank. All of a sudden, I'm in that point of stillness right there.
Yep. That is the absolute key. My guru says the breath is the key to all of those, the quiet mind, the expanded experience you're trying to have, the Kundalini awakening, all of this stuff comes from the breath.
Absolutely. Yep. And yep. Then, so for the new person who does start to regulate their breathing, they're starting to meditate, what is step two? Where should they kind of go after they've regulated it? They see their thoughts come and go. What's next? Where do the chakras come in? Things like that.
Great question. So yes, first step is we're lost in the mind. And so we need to anchor ourselves. We need to calm down. So how do we calm the mind? Breath. Because the breath is regulating the nervous system in the brain. So once you regulate your breath, like you were saying, after 5-10 minutes, you'll notice, whoa, my mind is way calmer. That is your sign on the road to go, okay, now go to the next practice. The next practice is body attention. And what that means is right now, you can see what I'm talking about. See how you're conscious now, and listeners, see how you're conscious in this moment. And within your consciousness, you find the body. And the body is an object here within your consciousness. So you just bring your attention there to that object. And don't even deal with your mind. Don't worry about it. And you just keep your attention here in silence. Attention is silent. So you just keep the attention there. And then you'll just notice legs, arms, right? Spine, torso. You just notice the form and the shape of this object. What this will do is it'll show you in direct experience, the body is an object that I am aware of, meaning I am not the body. Mm-hmm. The body is an object. And so this is step one. It gets you into the root chakra, which then starts to harmonize the energy. So what you're essentially doing is you're connecting consciousness to the body, which is energy. Mm-hmm. And so then that balances out the energy, right? Because you've been breathing, your mind is calm, and now your attention is stabilized on the body. And so what's happening, like we were talking about, the energy is blocked because of tension. Now you've relaxed, you're stable. And so what happens is the body starts to feel like it has a lot more energy. Right, that Kundalini starts to get released just through this simple practice of body attention.
You mentioned that takes you into the root chakra.
Yes.
Now, for anybody who does not know, the root chakra is the energy center that is located. Your body has energy centers all over it.
Everywhere.
There are seven main ones that run up and down your spine. Correct me if I'm wrong. The root chakra is the one at the base of the spine.
Yes, there at the tailbone. And it's your physical level of experience. It has to do with fear and safety. And so, yes, this is the root chakra is our physical, the densest level of the energy, which is our physical body.
Okay. And then we move up from there. In what you have put online through some of your teaching that I've seen is next during meditation, if you can start to be aware of how you are not the body.
Yes.
You're aware of your body, but then you start to notice pain or pleasure in the body.
Yes.
Sensations. Right. That brings you up to help clear out your second chakra.
Yes.
And the example I know I've used with you is when I'm meditating, something starts to itch. It's a very easy way to do it. So you just sit there and instead of scratching the itch or trying to fight the itch or ignore the itch, just, wow, okay, hello, itch. I'm just observing the itch. And you know what? The itch goes away.
Isn't it amazing?
It's amazing. Yeah. You got to give it a minute or two, but the itch goes away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so per your teaching, that is the second chakra that you're starting to clear up.
Yeah. And so just by doing this first thing, you're connecting your consciousness to the body with attention.
Yeah.
You're just, there's the body as an object. And then within that object, there are feelings. Pleasure and pain, itches, pain in the back, a good feeling of energy moving through you, right? There's all these different sensations. And what blocks this chakra is our constant reactivity to all of that. Mm-hmm. And so we're constantly reacting to the pain, constantly seeking after the pleasure. And that's what throws this chakra off. And as people listening to this, who are like yourself and I, coming off of addiction and stuff, this is the primary chakra that is off for us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we constantly run away from our pain. We do not want to feel it. And we constantly seek the pleasure. This is the addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so this will be extremely healing, learning how to just sit with what's going on in your body and just observe it.
Yeah.
Without reaction. Yeah.
And then you take it to the next level, which is the third chakra. You know, the solar plexus chakra there.
Yes, this is the voice in our head that's saying, "Oh, I cannot feel this pain." Right?
Yeah.
There's this narrative, these beliefs that are going on inside of us. Mm-hmm. And that's our third chakra. This is our stories and stuff that we've picked up from our parents, from our religions, from our cultures and everything. And so this would look like, especially with addicts, like my story was, I'm not lovable. Like people cannot love me. I'm not worthy of love or attention. And that's just a story. And where did I get that story from? It's from my parents splitting and my dad not being at home. And I internalized that as I am not worthy of his attention and love. Obviously, that's not true. If you met my dad, he's a very loving person. But I internalized that as a child. And so I carried that story with me, right? I am not worthy of love and attention. And so I had to drink in order to not feel that and to break out of that shell. So I would be like, hey, look at me, pay attention to me. And so that narrative led me into more and more alcohol, more and more things to try to fix that feeling. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's the level. This is considered the most challenging chakra. Like you were saying in the Course on Miracles, this is all about reprogramming. That's this chakra. The Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama, said, you don't even know you're on the spiritual path until you get to the third chakra.
Okay. Yeah. The third is one that I find the most challenging, as you were saying, because, at any rate, what I did, though, is I alluded to earlier, what I've been doing lately is I have like this little thought box that just sits right over here in meditation. As a thought comes, I put it in the box.
Yep.
And so I guess in an overall nutshell, for the beginning meditator, if you can let's just stick to the lower three chakras that we just discussed, because that's where a lot of people are stuck at before we get into the heart, the throat, the third eye, the crown. You know, if you can stick with your breath, first of all, to quiet down, you can start to notice yourself as separate from your body. You're not your body. Then you can start to sit with pain or pleasure, just observe the sensations in your body, and then take your thoughts and let them come in and go out, or put them in the thought box or whatever. You're going to be shining a lot of light on those lower three chakras and helping a lot of that clear up.
100%. That will balance all those lower three chakras.
Yeah.
And what you do with the thoughts, at first you don't deal with the thoughts. You let them pass.
Mm-hmm.
You just work on being here with your body. Okay. The body's an object. I am not the body. It's my vessel. If you don't first come to that, you won't heal, because you'll be identified with your body and you'll be terrified of the feelings in your body. You won't feel them. But if you see, oh, the body is an object, it's not me, and then it's okay. You can let yourself feel it. Once you have let yourself feel, now what we want to do is the thoughts come in, take the thought. Why am I thinking that? Where did this thought come from? And then you'll see, oh, I have this belief of I'm not worthy.
Mm-hmm.
Where did I get that belief? And you'll be like, well, I don't know, right? The mind is just like, wants to say, I don't know. It doesn't want to dig into it because it's painful. But when you keep asking, where did I get this? You'll see where you got it. When's the first time I felt unworthy of love? And you'll go all the way back to your childhood or wherever you picked that up. It could even be like an ex-wife or something like that told you, oh, you're a piece of crap. And you carry this with you. When's the first time I felt that? And just by being aware of, hey, this is where that thought came from. I'm carrying this belief around because I picked that up when I was 7 years old, and that conditioned me to see myself in life this way. And so then that's how you heal your third chakra. That's how you reprogram, because then you're like, is that even true?
Right.
Oh, of course I'm worthy of love, right? Everyone is.
Yeah. Absolutely. So one of the things that I want to ask you before we wrap up here in a little bit, you know, we talked about the lower three chakras, and then as we move up in meditation, it's the awareness, the heart, that we are all divine children of God, and nobody is to be looked down on or judged, or we are all a child of the divine. The throat chakra is the realization that we are all one. And I could talk forever about the law of one and how you are me and I am you and all that stuff. And then up to the third eye, which is our spiritual awareness that goes beyond the five senses. And then crown chakra. And when that gets opened up, we really tap into all that is the divine cosmos, universal intelligence. Which I know sounds really tempting to a lot of people, which is why a lot of people want to start up here. So I know what to do while they ignore the lower part. But when you get up here, Zach, you have mentioned there are some really cool spiritual, intuitive, psychic gifts that kick in. Can you talk about that for a second? Because you've alluded to once you get there, You just flow. You know the answer to everything intuitively in the moment. Yep. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, Jesus, you mentioned the Course in Miracles, and I'm a Jesus follower as well.
Oh, yeah.
Not necessarily in the religion, but Jesus is amazing. He says, think not what ye shall say, for it shall be given to you in the hour. So it's not that we know the answer. It's that the divine intelligence gives you the answer when you need it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, Jesus is saying that exactly. He's saying, don't think about it. It'll be given to you.
It'll be given to you. Like, stop planning.
Yes. I am of the opinion, and we can't prove it because we're not here with Yeshua, or, you know, we're not here with Jesus. But I am of the opinion, the more I study it, that Jesus may have been a yogi.
From a yogi perspective, it does seem that way. In the yogic sutras, which are older than Yeshua, they talk about walking on water. They talk about transfiguration. They talk about bilocating. They talk about being able to dematerialize and rematerialize somewhere else. They talk about being able to change the substance matter into something else. I talk about being able to manifest food or any object that you so wish. So all of the things that Jesus was doing are mentioned in the Yoga Sutras that are older than Jesus.
Yeah. Yes. And it's interesting when you read the Bible, I have become a big fan of, I hate to say deconstructing the Bible, but just looking at it very analytically.
Yes.
And the nuances in it. One of the ones that people bring up to me all the time is John 14:6. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. None come to the Father except through me. Well, if you go back to the Aramaic, it's then when you look at the translations and transliterations, it could be through me or it could be through this. And there's no way that we can prove either or. It's just the popular way that we've understood it, but it could be I am, the I am presence, is the way, the truth, and the life. None come to the Father except by this.
Yes.
His example, do as I did. Not necessarily look at me as God man and bend knee to me. Walk as I do. And then you will come to the Father. But we could talk about this forever. You mentioned when you get up there and you have the energy flowing, you've unblocked the chakras, as Jesus said, don't think about it. It'll just be given to you.
Yep.
And I think that if people can get to that place in their life, I have just started to scratch the surface of trusting in that. Yep. Then in our recovery, it makes life so much more manageable and our fear just leaves us. And that's when you just start to notice so much cool stuff around you.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. This is what yogis are all about. Yoga means to be one with God. And in yoga, we see that God is the light of consciousness within each being and beyond each being. funnily enough, Jesus says, life is the light of men. you are the light of the world. I am the light of the world. God is light. Anyway, we could go deep into that. Mm-hmm. But the light within you, consciousness, right? That's what we say God is in yoga. And the whole problem is that we've developed an ego. So now it's become God and me, mm-hmm. right? But really, there's just consciousness. Me is an idea that mm-hmm. happens in consciousness. But if me, the concept me, goes... We call that where the me dissolves into... It doesn't die. Mm-hmm. It merges, right? Yeah. So a lot of times, and your listeners probably have heard ego death before.
Yeah.
Big mistake. Big, big, big mistake. No. It's ego dissolving, meaning mm-hmm. becoming one with, right? If something dissolves, like if you mm-hmm. put salt in water, it dissolves into the water. Mm-hmm. But the salt is still in there, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing. We're dissolving the I into the pure light of consciousness. So it's just consciousness here.
Yeah.
And so that's what yoga is. And so once you come to that, once you place your consciousness in different parts of this vessel, you can achieve these spiritual powers, which are called siddhis. Mm-hmm. S-I-D-D-H-I-S.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to look that up. That's new. I have not heard you mention that before, but that's awesome.
Yes. And it comes from keeping your pure light of consciousness on these different chakras. Mm-hmm. So how you walk on water, if you wish to know, is by placing your attention in your throat chakra. Hmm. And this then allows you to walk across water. Yeah.
Okay.
But this is all mentioned in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. And for instance, if you place your light, your attention here in the heart, you can know all the contents of the mind. If you place your attention down in your sacral chakra, you can tap into all of your past lives.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's...
So there's lots of different spiritual powers you can develop, but they can only be developed through surrender, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seek first the kingdom of heaven and all will be added unto you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And so this is what yogis say as well. Turn towards the light of consciousness within you. Let yourself totally dissolve in that and all of the powers will be given to you.
Well, that's awesome. That is just amazing. Mm-hmm. So that is out there for the people who are seeking it. And the best part of this stuff, it's all free. It really is. It's free. You know, this is the divine, and these are gifts that are available to all of us if we're willing to work on developing them. So brings me kind of to closing here, Zach. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing in the world, how you are helping people discover this, what you're bringing, where can people find out more about Zach and what he does, and take it away.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So what I'm doing in this world is I help people to discover the inner light of consciousness to teach them how to balance their energy, right? How to, what we were just doing there, to balance that out so that the energy is able to rise. And I'm doing this just to help people find inner peace and healing, and not just for them, but for their family and their children and their communities. Mm-hmm. And so what I do is I work one-on-one with people, and I take them through this. I train them in this, and that could take them a month. It could take them 6 months, a year. It's really based on how committed they are to the discipline. And then outside that, I have spiritual communities that are absolutely free for people to come in and learn this stuff on their own. And we have group calls every week, which you're a part of.
Yep.
And they can find me at Conscious Warrior Training. I'm on all the social media platforms. However, our community is in the school app, S-K-O-O-L. And it's free to join. That's how you can find me. I'm predominantly on TikTok. You can find me doing lives there quite regularly and posting content quite regularly. But if they're wanting to join the communities, they would find that at Conscious Warrior Training. And if they want to work with me one-on-one, they can just reach out to me either on social media or through the community. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome, Zach. So anyway, I think we'll close this out here.
now. We've just kind of went a little bit past an hour, so I kind of try to keep things to about that. Man, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you being here. Everything you've brought to me in the short time my life and my practices in the short time I've known you. I think it was just very synchronistic that I found you on social media when I did. And I'm so glad I can call you a friend now. And it's just awesome, man. I cannot wait to see what the future holds for all of us, everybody in your community, all the people whose lives we are touching in our in all of our many ways. So thank you. Thank you for being here.
And I'm so grateful for you, man. You've just really brightened my life. As soon as I came across your stuff and just like watching what you were saying, I'm like, I love this guy. I don't even know him. But I instantly felt connected to you. So the feeling is mutual, man. I feel very grateful that we've been brought together, and it's not for this is not by mistake.
No,
I do see that what you and I are both doing kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And so I am just so excited for what you're doing. I know this is going to help out so many people. And I just feel so honored to be able to call you a friend and a brother. And literally anything that I can do, please let me know.
Yeah. Feelings mutual, man. For right now, though, in closing, can you take us out with the yogi prayer like you do?
Sure.
I think that'd be awesome for the viewers/listeners to experience that.
For sure. So as we know now through modern science, everything is vibration. So by making vibrations in your body, it changes the energy, changes the vibration. So I'll say a yogi prayer. It's very old. It's called Asatoma. I'll say it in Sanskrit, then I'll say it in English. So what we want to do is we want to do the prayer mudra. Mudra means seal. So you're putting your hands together and then you put them against your heart. This is where your individual consciousness is, your individual spirit. And we connect that. We send a prayer up to the all-pervading consciousness. So, as we always do, just coming to your body, notice your body here in the chair. Noticing where it is. And just feel your body here. Hum, hum.
Asatoma sadgamaya tamasoma jyotirgamaya mrityoma amritam gamaya. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Lead us from untruth into truth. Lead us from darkness into light. And lead us from death to eternal life. May all beings find peace. Let there be peace, let there be peace, let there be peace.
Awesome. All right.
Thank you, man.
Thank you, Zach. All right.
Thank you so much.
That is it, my friend.
Thanks
much
for
love
having me,
and
brother.
Peace to you, brother.
Much love to you too, man.
All right.
See you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Sober Awakening Podcast. We are so grateful and excited that you're part of this journey. As always, please remember, any businesses, services, or individuals mentioned here are shared because they resonate with our mission. We receive no financial benefit from promoting them. It's all about guiding you toward what inspires and empowers your journey. If you've found value in this podcast, please consider supporting our mission with a tax-deductible donation at www.soberawakening.org. Every contribution helps us continue providing resources and inspiration for those seeking sobriety and spiritual fulfillment. Don't forget to subscribe, share this episode, and visit us at soberawakening.org for more resources and upcoming events. Let's continue this path together toward a life of sobriety and spiritual fulfillment. We love you so much. Until next time, stay sober-minded and intuitively guided.